Welcome to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, where world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan answers your questions and offers healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure what to use for flea, tick, and heartworm prevention? Join Dr. Judy now as she interviews the top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com. I'm your host, Dr. Judy, and my guest today is Dr. Ian Billinghurst. I'm so excited to have him back again, all the way from Australia. And for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Billinghurst, he's kind of one of the originators of, you know, really getting the word out there and helping educate people about biologically appropriate raw feeding for dogs. And as a matter of fact, his first book, Give Your Dog a Bone, which was published in late 1993, sets out the basic principles of canine nutrition using raw, whole, and commonly available foods, including raw bones, meat, offal, which is the organs, vegetables, eggs, yogurt, etc. And, you know, for me, I think that is, you know, that's what I talk about all the time. That's what I try to educate people about. We, you know, really, whoever said you are what you eat, I knew who it was at one point. It is so true. And for our pets, it's the same thing. And so, you know, when you put good stuff in, you get good results out. So, you know, my 17-year-old dogs that are able to run across the field and chase the miniature horses and play, you know, that is something that we see when we have pets who are biologically appropriately fed. And so last week we talked a lot about the bacteria in the food and kind of the fallacies with the FDA saying everything has to be dead. so if you didn't hear that show, go back and find it in the archives. Ian, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much, Judy. Good to be back.
So this week, I promised that we would talk about, you know, how to balance these diets, some of the fallacies with AFCO and NRC, you know, and help people a little bit, because this is where people struggle. And so some people say, well, I'd really love to feed a raw diet. I have no idea how to balance it. I'd really love to feed a raw diet. My vet says no way. You know, I want to feed a raw diet, but I can't take that with me when my dog goes to the kennel, which I always say, oh, poo on that, because you can make it up ahead of time, put it in its nice little packages and take it with you and make sure they put it in the fridge. So what's the fallacy with AFCO and NRC? I mean, you know, they make these nice little lists. Our dogs should have, you know, this many units of vitamin E and this many units of, you know, vitamin A. And, you know, do they really know what they're talking about, or is it a bunch of hooey?
What they know how to make is food that will not cause an obvious problem in the short term. And they know how to make that sort of food from materials that are absolutely inappropriate to be fed to a dog or a cat, for that matter. And they actually say that in their books, that they only use this type of material. They say this only, their rules only apply to this type of material, this highly denatured, cooked to death material, a lot of which is derived from grains or from very dubious animal sources, as we discussed, high in endotoxins, for example. So, and the animal fats that have been destroyed, if they're polyunsaturated by being cooked, is just incredible. So this food is full of toxins of various kinds, whether it's endotoxins or whether it's badly damaged fats. It is really bad from that point of view. But this is the food they're talking about. And what it ends up is that this food, the balance of this food sits on a knife edge. It is easily unbalanced. I want you to picture a tightrope walker. And that's the way this food is balanced. A little bit of food in one direction and over it goes. And the other thing to say about it is they're looking at nutrients, not foods. And I did mention that last time. We need to look at foods, not nutrients, because if you feed the right foods, the nutrients follow. And the only caveat to that is that some of our foods, as they are produced on nutritionally depleted soils and therefore nutritionally depleted plants, have less nutrient-dense qualities or traits compared to food that was produced 50, 60, 70 years ago. However, even that food is far more biologically appropriate, far more nutritious, and far more likely to be balanced than the food that they produce with these awful meat meals and grains and so on that I call fake industrial food. Now, in contrast to fake industrial food, the balance when you make real food, it's like sitting on a roadway. Unless you do something really stupid, like feed an all-meat diet or an all-organ meat diet or something like that, and cats will train you to feed, say, all liver, if you let them, then you start to get imbalances. But these are rare, and they're difficult to do. So as long as you have some picture in your mind of the cat as an obligate carnivore and your dog as a carnivorous omnivore heading to and a scavenger, and understand what that means in terms of what they should eat, then the balance is easy to achieve. Very simple. So for a dog, it's like I'm going to feed a whole carcass plus extra bones and maybe some extra vegetable material to mimic gut contents. And once we understand that, that vegetable material then begins to, we can look at all sorts of things to add to that in the way of healthy herbs, because the cattle, the sheep, the goats, the deers, the moose, the whatever that would have eaten those things in the past had passed these on to the prey animals that ate them. And interestingly enough, our dogs, and our cats for that matter, one of the things that they ate more than anything else would have been young calves, young ruminant animals, or young animals of any description. But as mammals, what did they find in the gut of these young animals? They would have found milk, fermented milk. And so this too is biologically appropriate. So I guess that's a broad sketch of the situation with balance.
And so what do you find are some of the most commonly forgotten or deficient nutrients if someone's making their own raw diets? Because I have a few things that I feel like are pretty commonly deficient, but what do you find if somebody's, you know, kind of winging it and they're like, well, okay, he just said I can't really screw it up. So what are some things that they should be sure to put in there? What are the things that you find that are the deficient most often? And where might they find those nutrients?
Well, they leave out bones and they leave out organ meat. And sometimes they leave out vegetables. And you start, what they do is they say, oh, well, I'll just feed, say, chicken wings. And that's all they feed. In Australia, it's really good because the food, I've actually sold the raw food business so I could concentrate on writing and lecturing and so on. So that's gone from my life, but it remains, and they are obligated to continue with my recipes, which is great. So, and for me, this is good because I supply this to some of our local vets, mostly my own practice that I also sold just recently. So I have access to this food, which is complete and balanced in a biological sense, in that it contains organ meat, liver, kidney, heart. It contains bones. It contains meat. It contains cartilage, offal. I'll mention that. And things like raw eggs and their shells, fruit and vegetables, alfalfa and kelp. Now, the alfalfa and the kelp bring in the trace minerals, because the kelp coming from the sea all the trace minerals from all around the world are washed into the ocean, and so they're picked up by the kelp. So it's brilliant. And the alfalfa, or lucerne as we call it in Australia, that sends roots down 40 feet into the subsoils, where it picks up the trace minerals in the subsoil, which, and these are minerals that haven't been leached out. So this way, we provide pretty well a complete and balanced diet, at least in a biological sense. And the dogs that eat this sort of food thrive. So in my case, what we do in our family is we feed raw meaty bones at one meal, and they're usually, quite often they're chicken, but they can be lamb shanks or kangaroo tails or whatever we've got. And the other meal we feed a patty of this commercial food that I formulated and produced. And the joy is, for me, our animals are never sick. Oh, right. Boy. I don't have to waste my time spending doing surgery or drugs or anything. They just are absurdly healthy. And, of course, they go walking with us, and we do happen to live on a few acres. I can't let my dogs out into the paddocks because they would chase the sheep. If they were able to get out there, they would eat the droppings, and that would be absurdly healthy for them as well.
Right.
So that's the way I achieve balance for us. But if they were just to eat those patties, that would be fine too, because they are based on roughly 60% raw meaty bones, where there's 50% bone and 50% meat and some cartilage thrown in, maybe 15% organ meat, 10% of those additional things like eggs and kelp and what have you. We also throw a bit of garlic in for the dogs, not a lot, but a bit. And the organ meat, about 15%, vegetable material, 15%, roughly those things. Now, if you do that, you cannot go wrong. And it doesn't have to be at every meal. It can be over time, because in an evolutionary sense, our dogs and our cats, well, our cats did to some degree because they were eating whole prey. Our cats were, in fact, getting pretty well a complete and balanced meal at every meal, but our dogs did not. They balanced their meal over time, and that's the way humans tend to balance their food as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's been one of my arguments for a long time, and, you know, I think people have been so brainwashed by the processed pet food companies and by their veterinarians that every single meal that goes into the bowl has to be 100% complete and balanced. Otherwise, your dog's going to die. And let me tell you, I have a client who came in for 3 years. They were feeding their dog cooked ground hamburger, so cooked ground beef, and carrots. And that was the dog's diet for 3 years. So the dog was still running around the room. And I said, well, okay, this dog is obviously not dead. It's not getting optimum nutrition, and I'm sure we're going to find a few things that, you know, are not quite so great here. However, the dog was not dead. So for those who are afraid that you're going to kill your dog if you screw it up and you don't have a complete and balanced meal in the bowl every single meal, stop it. Stop listening to that brainwashing, because it's not true. You know, there are mornings when I get up and I say, oh, you know, gosh, you know, we've got so many eggs from the chickens, I got to use up a bunch of eggs. So guess what, guys? Everybody's getting a bunch of eggs in their bowl this morning, and, you know, maybe we'll throw some veggies in there with it and, you know, whatever we happen to have. And, you know, I think the variety is good for them. And, you know, it is true that you need to make sure that you're getting, you know, I think the three things that I find that are really out of whack are, you know, not enough calcium because there's not enough bone, not enough trace minerals. So I think that we're getting some manganese and zinc deficiencies quite often in home-prepared diets because, you know, people go, you know, it's just this little sprinkle of kelp. How big of a difference can it make? Well, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, well, of course, if we're feeding all chicken and no beef, then we're probably going to get a zinc deficiency. And on that manganese deficiency, and that's an interesting question, there's, I think it was Karen Becker came out and Rodney Habib with the story of, well, we now understand that as, and I guess this was from some studies that they looked at, that cranial cruciate ligament problems, which are so common in dogs, or mm-hmm. anterior cruciate ligaments, so common, is a degenerative disease. Now, we've known it's a degenerative disease for some time, but the question was, why? And this actually brought me back to thinking about chickens, because chickens themselves often suffer from a thing called porosis, where their tendons slip off, and that was a manganese deficiency. And they pointed out that the cruciate ligaments is also, or from the studies that was done, is a manganese deficiency. And they proposed that this was because it was important to feed a whole prey model where you fed the skin, the fur, the wool of the animals, because these were high in manganese. And I thought about this, and I thought, no, that can't be right, because what does that fur, that wool, and skin, well, not so much the skin, but the it was the hair and the fur that was full of manganese. What happens to that? And even the skin, it's passed out. It doesn't get absorbed. But then if we look at bone, it's got a higher manganese content. And if you feed enough bone, you feed enough manganese. And then I realized, ha-ha. So even our adult dogs, and because they continue to be scavengers, they get enough manganese. And then I began to correlate it with my own experience, and it was always the processed pet food dogs who got these low levels of manganese anyway that were getting the problem. I hadn't seen it in properly fed raw food dogs. And when I mean properly fed, fed as scavengers where there's a high proportion of bone in the diet. So yes, it's very important to feed that bone. It's very important to feed a variety of meats. And red meat is higher in zinc, of course, and the tougher meats, the meat that where the animal has done a lot of work is higher in zinc, and on and on. And also, of course, there's actually zinc within the bone themselves. So the point is, as long as we're feeding something that is very close or relatively close to evolutionary norms, the animal is going to do really well. And look, with respect to your carrot and meat-fed dog, one of our relatives, she had a dog that died of 18. It was a little white shaker. It was a Maltese terrier. It wasn't a shaker, actually, but every time I look at them, I think of little white shakers. Right. Anyway, this little Maltese lived to 18, and for the last 8 years of its life, it only ate meat. It was raw meat, nothing else. And that goes to show you again, and it may have lived longer if she'd have bothered to balance the diet up.
Right.
We don't know. This is an anecdotal one patient picture. But this little dog, and little dogs live longer than big dogs anyway, we know that. But this little dog did brilliantly on just an all meat diet. If it was a puppy on an all meat diet, it would not do well. In fact, it would probably, if that's all it was fed, it would be crippled and its bones would fall to bits and it would die from a calcium deficiency. But there was a sufficient calcium in that meat to maintain its bones into old age. So isn't that brilliant?
Huh. So it looks to me like you're feeding a higher bone content than what is generally put out. So, you know, a lot of the processed raw food companies over here, they kind of stay with about 10% bone. And when you see people talking about diets, they're always talking, you know, the 80-10-10, you know, with 10% bone, 10% organ, and then the other 80% they're saying is meat. Although, you know, in my world, you've got to get your fruits and veggies in there for 10% of that. So, you know, is 10% bone overall in the diet, you're saying that's too low?
Absolutely. Minimum 20%.
Minimum 20. That's very interesting.
Minimum Thanks. 20. And you can go up to 60. But particularly for growing dogs, and particularly growing dogs of the larger and giant breeds. And not only that, you could be feeding a diet where you're making, say, some Barf patties. And by the way, the only reason that this complete and balanced thing came in is because it's the easiest way to make a commercial diet, because
right.
every meal does have to be complete and balanced just to ensure that ongoing you're not going to get problems. Well,
right.
you're probably not anyway, but from a commercial viewpoint, that's what you have to do. But anyway, you can feed a commercial diet, say our diet, which is high in bones, and throw in some extra bones, and there's no way you're going to unbalance that diet. So my dogs, for example, eat, and my cats for that matter, eat 50, well, no, the cats not so much. Let's just stick with the dogs on that one. The dogs eat 50% of the barf patties, which are high in bone, and the other meal is raw meaty bones. And we alternate those meals, and that's the way it goes.
So they're getting a ton. What about puppies? Do they need more or less bone? I always worry about
more.
Puppies. So they need more bone. Okay.
They need more, and I tell the story in my lectures too. We just come back from England. This was in late 90s when this was the first of the lectures that I was started around the world. We started in the UK, and then the next year we went to US and did spend 3 months and two of most states where we did 2 and 3 day seminars. And we hopped across to France after that UK seminar, and we're sitting in a motel room, and the story came on about the wolves that were being reintroduced to Yellowstone National Park. And of course, the wolves were thriving. And I say, well, they were thriving, their bones were perfect, they were pulling down animals and scavenging animals and doing all those things. There were no white coats to determine whether those puppies were going to get elbow and hip dysplasia and make sure that they had the right balance. They naturally balanced it up. And in the world of wolves, because the puppies are last into the feast, once they're being weaned by their mums, they are on their own. And they get left the leftovers, and the leftovers consist of a lot of bones and cartilage, and that's what they get to gnaw on. So,
interesting.
Just from an evolutionary sense, these are the things I described in Give Your Dog a Bone and Grow Your Pups with Bones. It's just these simple evolutionary traits that we need to look to and say, well, these are the rules we need to follow. What happens? How are these animals? How do they develop and grow in the wild? Because they do it, and they do it well. They don't get these problems. You get these problems when you screw it up at home. And for puppies, the biggest screw-up is to feed an all-meat diet. And one of the things that impressed me on that respect, very early on when they were introducing the Hills prescription diets into Australia, we had some lectures by one of my classmates, Professor Rick Reed, and he was in Murdoch, Western Australia, the university veterinary faculty there, and he spoke about some studies they had done looking back through the clinical records of all the major teaching hospitals. And up until late 70s, early 80s, the only problems they saw, the bone problems, there was no hip and elbow dysplasia, that was very rare. What they saw was fractured bones, weak bones from a lack of calcium from the people who would occasionally feed lots of meat. Because in Australia up until about the late 70s, people mostly fed home-produced diet, and they understood that you went to the butcher and you got lots of bones and gave it to your dog. So that's what they understood. Anyway, he produced this paper, and he said, but after that, we began to see lots more hip and elbow dysplasia. And he said, and I haven't worked it out. And he said, the one thing that really amazed me, he said, we had a butcher who just fed meat. Now, I don't think the butcher just fed meat. I think he fed meat and bones to his dogs. He said they had the most perfectly developed dogs. And that was another anecdotal story, but he probably didn't realize that the butcher was feeding lots of bones. But this correlation of the major teaching hospitals suddenly finding all these dogs with hip and elbow dysplasia correlated precisely with the introduction to Australia of processed foods from overseas. And then that was the early 1980s, they started to come in. And by the late 1980s, when this Hills program came into Australia, the prescription diets, there were prescription diets for these problems, which had never occurred before.
Exactly.
And now they're occurring.
Exactly.
And this is epidemiology in action.
We need to take a break. We'll be right back with Dr. Ian Billinghurst in just a few moments.
Interested in learning more? visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today, on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on DreamVision7Radio.com, where you can hear my show every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern. So today I'm speaking with Dr. Ian Billinghurst from Australia, and we're talking about biologically appropriate raw foods and, you know, how to balance things and how to make sure that you're kind of not screwing up, because we're all told by our veterinarians and our friends and really even some of the top proponents of raw feeding, you know, kind of say that every meal has to be complete and balanced. And, you know, it's okay to change it up, and it's okay to make little mistakes. But over the long haul, yeah, you can't leave out the organs. You can't leave out the bones. Well, you can. But if you want optimum health, don't leave out the organs, don't leave out the bones, don't leave out the kelp or the alfalfa or something for those trace minerals. And I think that's one of the areas in my practice, Ian, where I get, like my lady with the hamburger and carrots, and I said, okay, well, look, we've got to fix this. We've got to get some organ meat in here, and we've got to get a calcium supplement in here if you're going to cook it and not feed it raw. And that was where she drew the line. She said, okay, well, find me a processed food, because I'm not going to go get organs. The organ thing just skeeved her out, and she just couldn't do it. And I said, can't you just go get some liver? And she absolutely couldn't do it. So we ended up switching her over to, a processed raw food, you know, that was pre-made for her, that already had the organs all ground up in there, because she just didn't want to handle them. And so, and I find that to be true for a lot of clients. And I get it. You know, there are, like, tripe is so disgusting and smelly. And, you know, if you've got a dog with a beard, it's going to smell like tripe, and that's just awful. It's, when it's in your freezer, you open the freezer, you know it's in there. But it's good stuff. You know? But it is a drawing right. line for a lot of people.
Well, we actually include that in our dog food as well. I didn't mention that. But, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about a good commercial product. And it has to be a good commercial product. It's going to have that balance because it follows the idea that each meal can be complete and balanced. There's nothing wrong with that if you can achieve it, but it simply doesn't have to be. Balance over a period of time is absolutely an evolutionary or genomic norm, but you can also do it as a complete and balanced meal. And for those people who find, and often it's vegetarians or people who mm-hmm. just find the whole raw feeding thing repugnant, then a good commercial raw food is the way to go. And it's so much better than fake industrial food. And,
well,
and on that note, too, I should, some people add in fake industrial food just to be sure they get everything because the packet
right.
says it has. And, oh, dear, I say, no. If you just don't do that. If you're feeding that food, you are actually diluting the value of the raw food, so just don't do it. But on that note, also, a lot of people say, oh, dear, how can I transition my dog from kibble to raw? And for 99% of dogs is just do it. One mm-hmm. day, give the kibble to the chickens or give it to somebody you don't like. Well, you shouldn't do that because they'll feed it to their dogs. But and that's unfair on the dogs. But then just you can leave a short fast if you want to. Better for dogs than cats. Then just feed it, and it'll be absolutely fine. There won't be a problem. And for those people who do feed kibble and raw, that also illustrates the fact that it really doesn't cause a problem in the gut. And if it does, it relates to hydrochloric acid and the response of the stomach, particularly, to the presence of either a high carbohydrate or a high protein meal in the diet. And if you're mixing the two together, the stomach can get a bit confused and not produce enough hydrochloric acid to deal with the protein if there's also a high level of carbohydrate. That's really part of the problem. The other part of the problem that can occur is because the microbiome changes in response to a raw whole, well, a raw meaty bone or a biologically appropriate raw diet as opposed to a carbohydrate-rich fake industrial diet. The microbiome changes to deal with that. And sometimes that changeover period can cause a bit of upset. But then those people who do this regularly mix the kibble with the raw, the microbiome has adjusted itself to deal with it.
Right. So, yeah, I have to say,
there's a whole lot of issues I just covered in that short
period.
Well,
that was good because those are questions that I get quite commonly. And I have to say, we take in a lot of rescue dogs that, you know, they come with a baggie full of disgusting, rotten kibble, half the time filled with maggots, or they come with nothing. But you know that they've been eating kibble. And, you know, I basically look at them and go, well, kids, welcome to the new world, and here's raw food in your bowl. And, you know, the biggest problem that I have with it is that they don't recognize it as food. They're like, well, where's my crunchy potato chips? Where's my crackers, you know? And so, you know, sometimes I have to put it in their mouth for them the first few times. Sometimes I have to warm it up a little bit and kind of go, no, it's really food. But once they figure out that it's food, they're all at it. And, I've only had a couple dogs that don't particularly like. I think it's a texture thing. I don't do a gradual changeover. I'm not one of those people. It's like, hey, you're having raw food today. Yay.
that's the best way. And the fact that they don't maybe recognize it as a food and attack it more slowly means it does give them time to adjust to it. And,
yeah.
Of course, it doesn't matter if they only eat a small bit of real food because it is so much more nutritionally beneficial for them mm-hmm. than the fake industrial stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to pick your brain on this. So And this is good. This will maybe segue us into something else that I wanted to talk about as well, because I know you're an expert on it. So fats in the diet, you know, everybody gets really crazy. Oh, you can't feed a high-fat diet. And so, you know, if you're feeding a lot of chicken backs and chicken wings and chicken necks and you're leaving the skin on there, you know, they're fairly high in fat, fairly high in bone, and fairly low in, you know, actual meat on some of those body parts. And people get a little crazy and say, well, you can't feed a high-fat diet to dogs because they're all going to develop pancreatitis. And, you know, God forbid, that's life-threatening. It's horrible. And I have a dog who's been prone to pancreatitis. You know, I think the big thing that people don't understand is that fat is not the only thing that plays into pancreatitis. But I did an interview with the folks from the Keto Pet Sanctuary, and we were talking about their diet. So this is my segue into that. Because I know you're an expert on that as well. So the keto diets are extremely high in fat. And I said, okay, well, how come you got, you know, how can you do this? How come these dogs aren't all dying of pancreatitis? And the answer was, we've never had a dog with pancreatitis. And he said the reason is because it's not cooked. And when you cook the fats, that's when you get saponification and oxidation, and that contributes to the inflammatory markers that cause the pancreatitis. Yes? No?
So the short answer is absolutely correct. But if you are feeding, if you're trying to transition one of these dogs, and you're using kibble together with a high-fat raw diet, then you probably will get pancreatitis.
Right, right.
So you must make that switch. And you don't have to be, if you're beginning a keto diet and you do have a dog with pancreatitis, start slowly. No. Start with some pulp from a juicer and then gradually increase the fat and the protein. And you only take the protein up so far, somewhere between 5 and 10% maybe of the diet, but you then gradually increase the fat. And some of that fat you will make as, start off very cautiously with medium chain triglycerides and or coconut oil,
right,
butter, and then just gradually increase it. And then throw in a little bit more animal fat and just do it. And this dog will transition over beautifully to becoming a fat burner instead of a sugar burner, and then all the benefits that ensue from that.
Right. So we only have a couple minutes left in this segment, and so I do want to mention that Dr. Billinghurst has written just a phenomenal book called Pointing the Bone at Cancer. And I don't know, how long did that come out? A year or two ago?
2016.
Okay, a couple years.
November, yeah.
So, year and a half. Absolutely. It's a brain buster, I have to tell you. I had to lock myself on an airplane for 5 hours to plow through some of the middle parts where we really got into chemistry. And but let me tell you, I was never so happy to gain knowledge and information. The book is just groundbreaking. Anybody who's ever dealt with cancer or, you know, is worried about cancer in their pets really should read Pointing the Bone at Cancer. It's not a short book. It's not an easy book. But man, oh man, the knowledge that you will gain, the understanding that you will gain of how, and a lot of the stuff that we've talked about in these couple of radio shows with, you know, looking at the evolution and how, you know, humans and dogs and cats have evolved and where we are on the evolutionary scale and how our diets have evolved really is, it's pretty eye-opening. And I have to say, you made biochemistry readable. And biochemistry was like my least favorite subject in college. I just barely hung on by the skin of my teeth. And I said, boy, I wish I'd had an instructor who could have broken it down as well as you did, because I could finally understand it.
Well, I wish my younger self had that text as well, because I hated biochemistry and could see no relevance for it.
Exactly.
That's in 2 degrees. in agricultural science and veterinary science. So, but later on, I came to realize the absolute depth of significance of it. It's fundamental.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But, it's just, as I was reading, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a biochem nightmare. And then I was like, hey, wait a minute, I actually understand it. So thank you very much for that. Okay, we are going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few moments to wrap up our two-part segment with Dr. Ian Billinghurst, all the way here from Australia. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Interested in learning more? Visit Dr. Morgan's website at www.drjudymorgan.com, where you'll find detailed information about her blogs, a schedule of her upcoming speaking engagements, free information about integrative and holistic medicine, as well as an interactive forum where anyone can ask Dr. Morgan a question completely for free. Visit her website today to join the mailing list, where you'll find exclusive information and promotions only available to those select subscribers. Dr. Morgan is an accomplished author, having published several books about veterinary medicine and home cooking for your pets. You can find From Needles to Natural, detailing her journey from practicing traditional medicine to understanding the healing power of holistic practices today on Amazon Prime, as well as What's for Dinner, Dexter, and Canine Kitchen Capers, which are two great recipe books that you'll find both delicious and entertaining. When it comes to our pets' health, you can never be too careful. We invest significant time in ensuring that they have long and happy lives, but it's important to invest the same dedication into our own longevity. The key active ingredient in Dr. Morgan's wellness formula, Pure New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet, is now available as a standalone human-grade product. Life Deer Antler Velvet is a whole food supplement rich in calcium and collagen to support healthy joints and strong bones. Our products prioritize purity, ethical harvesting, and quality sourcing above all else. Visit LifePureRecovery.com to learn more and order your first bottle today.
Tune in to world-renowned author, speaker, and holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy Morgan, and now radio host of Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network every Monday and Tuesday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Not sure which vaccinations should be given or how often? Not sure which food is best for your individual pet? Find out the answers to your questions in this weekly show, where Dr. Judy interviews top experts and showcases the latest products that will help your pets stay naturally healthy.
Does your dog have bad breath? Tired of spending money on expensive dental procedures? Try out Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops today and save money while maintaining your pet's oral health. With New Zealand Deer Antler Velvet as the primary ingredient, Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops are effective for treating stomatitis, gingivitis, and ulcers. You can purchase Dr. Morgan's Dental Drops directly from Amazon Prime or from her website, www.drjudymorgan.com. Dr. Morgan's wellness formula for dogs and cats provides multiple health benefits in one product. Made with all natural ingredients sourced from New Zealand, this supplement can be used routinely to maintain overall physical and mental well-being. This product is particularly beneficial for the maintenance of joint health, nerve and brain function, skin and coat health, immune function, gut health, and liver health. Find Dr. Morgan's wellness supplement today on Amazon Prime or at her website, drjudymorgan.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets. I'm Dr. Judy, and today my guest is Dr. Ian Billinghurst. And right before the break, we started talking about keto diets, which, that's short for ketogenic diet. And it's being studied mostly at this point for cancer cases, but it also can work really well for seizure disorders, which is what I think it was originally looked at for humans. But Ian, why don't you give us a brief synopsis of what a keto diet is and what it's trying to accomplish?
I think keto diets are far more beneficial and more natural and more ordinary than we think. And I just want to take you back in our own recent past, say 20,000 years ago, and a similar time period for our dogs, and what happened back then. Back then, we had intermittent periods of starvation and intermittent periods of feasting. And a lot of the time when we were starving, we would go into ketosis. Now, what's ketosis? Ketosis is where we burn our own fat for energy, but because the brain cannot use or get fat, it can't get across the blood-brain barrier, and the brain of ourselves today is mostly fueled by glucose. But back then, when there was no glucose around, and when an individual was starving, they would mobilize their own fat reserves. And the fat would end up in the liver. The mitochondria in the liver would convert that fat into ketones. And the ketones would then, and ketones are small molecules, acetone, beta-hydroxybutyrate, and acetoacetate. Beta-hydroxybutyrate is the biggie. It's the most important one, probably. These would cross the blood-brain barrier, and over a period of a few days, in the starvation realm, they would start to feed the brain. And so the person would survive. But the point I'm making is that because back then our dogs and our humans and our cats particularly lived on a low, very low sugar, low carbohydrate, high fat and protein diet, to a large extent, much of their time was actually spent in ketosis. So this is really our evolutionary state. And as I look back on dogs and cats that have changed over to the biologically appropriate raw food diet, I now realize, and have realized for probably a few years now, that a lot of these animals were actually spending a lot of their time in ketosis. And we would find this too if we did some testing of their urine and blood. Well, not so much their blood, but we just saw it in the urine quite often that the ketones were high. And I realized then that this, or over time I've come to realize this was absolutely normal. So we are actually designed to be intermittent ketone burners and fat burners. But today, because of our high carbohydrate diets, our fake industrial food diets, I'm talking about humans, cats and dogs, we are now sugar burners. And sugar, when it burns, is nasty and dirty. When you burn ketones, it's clean fuel. Fat and ketones are clean fuels. So how do you achieve high ketones in the blood? You achieve it under high starvation or high fat, moderate protein, low to no carbohydrate diets, or under extremes of exercise. And so fasting, a ketogenic diet, which is the high fat, moderate protein and low carbohydrates, and exercise are all things that we actually need to incorporate into our life today, whether we're cats and dogs or whether we're humans, because ketones are actually the fuel that we prefer. And it's interesting now that we understand that ketones are very valuable in a lot of neurological diseases, and one of those is Alzheimer's, where it's now Alzheimer's being looked at as type 3 diabetes, where neurons are actually insulin resistant. You cannot get the sugar into them, but you start feeding a ketogenic diet and these people start to show improvement, and we can do the same. And I've seen this happen with dogs and cats for years and not really understanding why, but recent research is beginning to explain it. It's absolutely wonderful.
Wow. That's, you know, my dad suffers with Parkinson's disease, and he has an incredibly high sugar diet, and, you know, trying to get him to change is just, I know, it's like the worst thing in the world, and I just watch the sugar go in, and I just shake my head and say, oh my gosh, this is
absolutely awful. You know, what you can do, Judy, if you can do it, we can get some exogenous ketones now.
Oh, really?
And feed them. Yes, absolutely. And this is what I'm looking at very much. For example, I got one patient has an insulinoma, and an insulinoma, of course, is high insulin, which drives cancer, and it puts the sugar down, and so the typical response to that is throw more sugar in the diet. But if you, by throwing in exogenous ketones instead of honey, over time, we can switch this dog around. So and we're working on that. So this is one way to defeat such a problem. But it's also, I had a client once, and it was really sad. I tried to talk to him about this, and it was that he had Parkinson's, and you could watch him just deteriorate as he came in with his dogs, and they were all on a raw food diet. And I tried to explain to him a study I had seen. And now the study was simply a small pilot study. They took about 50 people with Parkinson's, and they put them on a high-fat diet, and they all improved out of sight. And then they stopped it. They said, because we are worried that they will develop cardiac disease and cardiovascular. And I thought, oh, no. So they stopped it. Anyway, that was my first understanding that how important fat is for the brain. I still, at that stage, this was probably the early 2000s, I still didn't have the full knowledge. But this one has stuck in my mind, and I watched that man deteriorate. And I tried to explain to him what I'd read, but he had a wife who was a nurse, and the nurses were the worst people for this because they were indoctrinated to believe in the high cholesterol, high fat theory of heart disease.
Right.
And so but we are coming now. The science is in. We are learning more and more. This is a really exciting time. At times my wife has to get me off the computer and stop me Googling this stuff.
Well, you know, you're one of those people that there's just never enough information, and so it's just, you know, what else can I read? What other studies can I read? You know, where most people would be like, oh my God, I would never want to read that. So basically, we can get into a ketotic state through starvation or through feeding this keto diet, basically. And I've made the keto diets. I've made up a couple for some of my patients, and they do very well with them. But on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. So you're feeding at this really good raw diet, you know, the patty at one meal, the raw meaty bones at the other meal. How often do you fast your dogs? And for how long?
Every time.
Because I
got to
tell you, there would be a mutiny at my house if they missed a meal.
Yeah, well, the mutiny doesn't come from them. What happens is that when my wife goes to Sydney to look after the grandchildren and I'm left alone, then they don't get two meals a day for a number of days. They get one meal a day. So they get a small mini fast. But it only happens at that time because my darling wife is typical of the female species, because the female species is nurturing and feeding. And
you need to eat. You need to eat more.
That's right. all of that. And I cannot battle this sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, because a lot of people say, you know, fast them one day a week, you know, so they're getting two meals a day. Oops, you're not getting fed today. I don't think it's going to work in my house. I would have to leave the house for the day.
Yeah. Well, some people have found that, some dogs get very picky when they're fed two meals a day, and our dogs and cats are no different. Particularly the dogs, and the reason for that is that on a real food diet they're usually satisfied, particularly if it's relatively high in fat. So they actually don't need it. And I've had one lady who was a client of mine, has since gone on to be a huge advocate of raw feeding. Her dogs, one was a German Shepherd, the other one was I can't remember. It doesn't matter. It was a very slim dog. I can't remember the breed. That's a bit of Alzheimer's kicking in, and which is sad, but I am trying to be in ketosis. But those dogs would only eat every second or third day.
Huh.
And they were very similar to what happened in the wild. So quite often we don't need to feed our dogs that often. They would do absolutely fine, and they'll become more likely to eat what we offer them if they're only fed. And they do get an occasional fast. Now, I used to watch people talking about fast and cleaning out toxins, and it was always said to be a liver thing, so there's liver cleansing diets and all that. But now we realize that fasting is actually one of the benefits is to put the dogs into ketosis, and you usually have to be a fast for more than a day for that.
Right.
But the other thing is this, I used to call it autophagy, but as I realize now, the keyword is autophagy. Auto happens automatically. Phagy, where the body cleans up dead cells and dead organelles that need to be that are not working too well, and redistributes the spare parts, the proteins and the fats, to other organs and creates fresh new ones. And also, it's creating the ability of the body to get rid of sick stem cells, tissue stem cells, and create new stem cells. So these are the real benefits of fasting, as far as I can tell. And there may be something to do with the liver as well, but it's mostly this autophagy and ketosis. And ketosis is very much the way we're meant to be. So, that's my take on fasting.
So not a fad, something that hopefully is going to get some sticking power and, help us treat a lot of animals and people. And, oh my gosh, I cannot believe we just blew through another hour. Dr. Billinghurst, thank you so much for joining me, for educating everyone. I think this is going to be one of those episodes that's just going to explode because you are just a fount of information. I mean, it's just blowing my mind. It's tons and tons of information, and I really appreciate your willingness to help educate pet owners around the world. Keep up the good work. And for those of you who are interested in more of his work, I believe the website is drianbillinghurst.com.
That's it.
The book, Pointing the Bone at Cancer, is available on my website, drjudymorgan.com. I only have a few copies left, but we can always get more. Ian, thanks for joining us. For those of you who have been with us, you've been listening to Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets on dreamvision7radio.com. Until next week, hug your pets.
That's all for today. Find more answers to your questions next time on Dr. Judy Morgan's Naturally Healthy Pets, every Monday and Tuesday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time by going to dreamvision7radio.com. Join holistic veterinarian Dr. Judy to discover healthy options for raising your pets in a more holistic manner. Visit drjudymorgan.com to learn more.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.